Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
We're back with Dr. Bob Enright, the Forgiveness Institute, which is based at University of Wisconsin, right?
Well,
go ahead.
It's an NGO that's it's not really part of the UW. It's friendly to it.
NGO. Acronyms are always my nemesis.
Oh, yeah. It's a non-governmental organization. A nonprofit is what it is.
But it's sort of located. I mean,
it's located here in Madison, yes. And it's really our service arm of the research we do at the university.
Wow, that's fantastic. And when did it start? What year?
1994. Boy. So we've been around a while.
You have been. And I take it this has had a great impact on yourself, man, because you're preaching the word. You're the Johnny Appleseed of forgiveness.
That's one way of putting it. Yes, well, we started the social scientific inquiry of forgiveness. There was no social science on this topic, although there had been close to a century of work in what we call moral development, which focused on children becoming more fair. So we made a turn into the realm of mercy and forgiveness because it seemed to me every one of us on this planet have been treated unfairly by others. So we do have a decision to make whether to forgive them or not.
What if we're in relationships with someone on an ongoing basis? So it's parent, child, or whatever the case, where you just can't avoid them. And that angst, that hostility is always there.
Well, I think it's harder to forgive, but all the more necessary, because the point of forgiving is to have a goodness toward those who aren't good to you. And the paradox is, as you do that, your own suffering, your own broken heart begins to mend. And so if you're in an ongoing relationship and you just simply try to tough it out, sometimes the 100th problem can crush you, where with forgiveness, it's less likely to happen.
Or you just avoid real conversation, you just do small talk.
Well, you do, but that's not really entering into the other's world, and it's not real interaction. Forgiveness helps.
Right, but if you enter into the other world, often there's hostility because the other world could be blind, could be intolerant, could be bigoted, could be unforgiving at that end. So rather than experience the pain, people will just avoid and talk about the weather.
They very well could, and of course that isn't necessarily helping to solve the problem, because one thing people don't realize is when you forgive, you don't throw justice under the bus. When you forgive, you help the other to change. You strive for justice. It's not just a one-way street with forgiveness and forgiveness only.
That's true. So I guess I'm making no argument. I'm just throwing it out there because people have a hard time. Because if you just don't have to see someone or don't have to deal with them, then it's off the table.
Right. In other words, you forgive but don't reconcile. And we don't reconcile if the other continues to be harmful toward us. And so one can try to be good to those who aren't good to us, even if they're in Arizona where you're in Madison. But how can you be good to them if they're gone? Well, you don't speak disparagingly of them. You could speak kindly of them, not because of what they've done to you, but who they are as a person. There are ways to be good to those even who aren't in our presence.
I guess in a way, who are we to judge since, you know, we're not perfect, and good to the Lord, I've got 40,000 flaws, so who am I to judge, right?
Well, right, but at the same time, injustice is an injustice, and we can't say, well, just because I've had problems, it's not a big deal what they're doing to me, because what they're doing to me oftentimes is a big deal if I'm feeling it that way. And what forgiveness does is it gives you a way out of what we call the unhealthy anger that can actually bring you down. So when people say, I'll never forgive, my question is, what are you going to do with the anger that is built up within you?
Have another Big Mac, have another drink.
Exactly. But eventually, over time, that's not necessarily going to get rid of the anger, and then you need two Big Macs.
Well, sometimes you need three.
Right.
I mean, there is a point when you're full, but of course, as you get fatter, that point comes longer down the road, you know.
Indeed. But then we wear on our bodies, the stress of it all, when we could be rid of that. You see, otherwise the person is living within us as we ruminate on them, as we feel that stress and it doesn't go away. They have actually gotten to us. Forgiveness frees us from that. Mm. It frees us from the other within.
What about forgiving yourself? Because you're feeding guilt often, aren't you?
Yeah, well, forgiving the self is the hardest kind of forgiveness because we're harder on ourselves than others.
True.
So I recommend trying the roadmap of forgiving with others first. Know what it's like to be gentle and compassionate toward them, and then offer it to yourself.
I will confess, I had a hard time because I was brought up by these in a home of, I guess, politically liberal or progressives. And at the time I was a kid, there was a lot of racism and overt racism in the world. And my parents, the parents of my friends, would often count how many black players were on the floor. Oh, I can't believe they played four blank in mm-hmm. the game. And I would repel and recoil and, of course, think that their parents were evil, racist slime balls and weren't worthy of interaction.
Sure. Well, you know, obviously their speech and what they're saying can be very hurtful. And so I think it is a reasonable thing to say, you know, not only are they hurting a group, but they're also hurting me because it's something that I don't think is fair. And so that is actually a forgivable offense, for, even for you, even though you're not part of that race. When someone hurts another group and you are then hurt by the actions of that, you can go ahead and forgive the people for that. But again, ask for justice. Forgiveness and justice ought to exist side by side.
Well, it would be appropriate to call them out and say, well, that's insane, that's stupid.
Right.
Or,
well, that, right. Well, you can do it more, even more gently than that, so you don't shut down the conversation and start a fight, and to get them to think about it. So you, with a forgiving heart, you could actually do greater good rather than just start one more fight.
Well, what would one say if they use the N-word describing the number of players on the court?
Well, I think what I would do is ask, do you see the humanity in the other? And are you diminishing that humanity by what you're saying? And do you really need a lens that looks more broadly into what it means to be human? And do we all have worth? That's a simple question we ask in forgiveness education when we do it in Belfast or Athens or in Galilee. Do all people have worth? Even those who have hurt you. And that takes a long time to get into
yes.
the mind
Boy,
and the heart. But that's the work of forgiveness.
A lofty journey.
It's a lofty journey, but one that's completely necessary in this troubled world.
And the other party, as you well know, could be rooted deeply in some rather unsavory beliefs.
Right. But see, I think just asking the question, do all people have worth? What does that mean, that we're all special, unique, and irreplaceable? And if all people have worth, even those who act badly, do they have worth? Do those who you have been schooled to think are less than you are, do they have worth? And do they have equal worth to you? These are questions we need to ask.
I'm wondering if the intransigent opposite isn't willing to make that jump right away, if you just say, well, hey, the people you're talking about are people too.
Right.
It sort of be somewhat lighter.
Sure.
Way. Would that not be a good first step?
I think that's a great first step. That might be better than mine. Mitch, how much do I owe you?
Nothing at all. We'll come back with a phone call for Dr. Enright, the Forgiveness Institute. You have nothing. I forgive you, but I have no grudge against you. I'm misfiring. There's nothing there.
Well, that's good. I like that. See,
now,
you're starting with the forgiving heart.
Now, if you would have done something to me maybe 20 years ago, it's a different story, but you never did.
No.
We'll come back.
I wouldn't do it to you, Mitch.
Well, I know you wouldn't. In a moment, on the Mitch Hank Show on MadisonTalks.com.
For nearly two decades, Troy Research has been measuring attitudes and opinions for our clients worldwide. Success is determined by your customers. What do they know that you don't? Ask them. For Sony Motion Pictures, the Green Bay Packers, the Wisconsin Historical Society, Troy Research has asked questions that made decision makers wiser and more successful. Where can good research take your business? Call or email to talk about it. Troy Research, 271-8884. Or email jlittle@troyresearch.com.
We'd like to remind you that every day right here, 11 to noon, right after the Mitch Hank Show, we present Wide World of Radio. I'm your host, Bob Abella, and I pay tribute to the stars of radio's golden age. Radiotherapy is the sure cure. Dr. Crane of City Hospital helps a blind boy cope with his fear of sight. Then comedians Nichols and May make their humorous morning rounds. Next, the story of Dr. Kildare stars Lou Ayers and Lionel Barrymore as Drs. Kildare and Gillespie. Don't miss Wide World of Radio right after the Mitch Hank Show, today, 11 to noon.
Talk radio will never be the same. The uncommon sense of Mitch Hank has been unleashed worldwide. This is the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
If you operate a business, you know there is no one-size-fits-all solution for today's technology challenges. MadisonGeeks.com plans, services, and installs technologies for small and medium businesses like network systems, servers, firewalls, wireless access points, telecommunications, security, remote service options, and business productivity solutions. MadisonGeeks.com is your IT staff. They take time to sit down to discuss your needs and present cost-effective solutions. With a Better Business Bureau A-plus rating, they are your trusted IT outsource partner. Expect less downtime. Faster resolutions lead to more productivity. Fewer day-to-day issues. Their proactive maintenance helps prevent issues from occurring. MadisonGeeks.com also offers computer and laptop service and repair. Madison Geeks are there to help. They're known for their candid, friendly approach and reliable, ready response. Check them out online at MadisonGeeks.com. The great Joe DiMaggio still holds the major league record for the longest hitting streak at 56 games. Bucks Takeout Pizza has a 56-year winning streak for the best thin crust pizza in the city. Bucks Pizza has a unique taste like no other. Handmade pizzas with homemade sauce and homemade sausage. Two Madison locations on University Avenue and Cottage Grove Road. Just go to BucksPizzaMadison.com, BucksPizzaMadison.com.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hank Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hank Show.
Dr. Bob Enright of the Forgiveness Institute, and we're on somewhat short tether. We do more with you because we moved things a few times and had to reshuffle a bit, but we'll have more opportunities, I hope. And the phones, let's go to the phones, 210-1667. Hello, George.
Hey, Mitch, how you doing?
Good, fine.
Hey, I wanted to talk to a doctor. I love when Mitch has you on as guest because you remind me of either Gandhi or Jesus. You know what I mean?
I'll take Gandhi, but I don't think I qualify for the other one.
Well, those are some pretty good comparisons, George.
Well, it's because of forgiving. Obviously, how many times did they both say turn the other cheek and forgive and just, you know? But I got two questions for you, and I'll get off and listen. One is, you mentioned that you got to resolve that everybody has worth. We all have worth as human beings, right?
Right.
Okay, I'm going to ask you this first question, but my second one will be after this, but you can address them both separately. When does the worth begin? Okay, that's my first question. Think about it. When does each of our worth begin as human being? Okay, you know where I'm going with that. Mitch might not want to go open that door, and you might not either, but that's a whole other thing. But my other question is, how do you teach someone sometimes? Because when they cut you off in traffic and I want to flip them the bird, and sometimes I'll get mad and follow them real close, and almost you get real angry. And then maybe they didn't even see you flip the bird, or they're going on with their business and didn't even know they cut you off, and they go to work and just have a wonderful day, and I'm still mad at them. You know, my point of showing them is that maybe next time they won't cut somebody off, and I'm trying to help them with a little anger. Do you see what I'm saying? The learning part of when you forgive, you know? I mean, when is it best not to teach them so that they learn better in the future going forward so they don't have to be forgiven because they won't do that again? Do you see where I'm coming? Both my questions.
Yes. Okay. Let's start with the first one. When does it begin? Well, it's not that it somehow is infused in us at a particular time. It's part of our humanity. So as a human being, we have the worth that is not earned. It is unconditional. It is there. And so it's never injected after a particular time.
Well, when we're born or when we're created, conceived?
Well, it seems...
That's my question.
Well, the question really is with regard to where is our humanity, and clearly we have humanity in the womb. So
okay.
We definitely have worth as a human being.
Very good.
Okay, and then with regard to teaching others, the question is how we do that, how we teach. And if we teach through acrimony, or if we teach them a lesson by kind of spanking them on the road, not with a hand or even verbally, but with our car, I think we have to be very careful with that, because that might not be the best way to teach. In fact, some of my colleagues and I are starting to get interested in this issue of road rage and forgiving, because we think a lot of road rage that is serious starts with an anger that might have happened when you were a child or an adolescent or after a breakup with someone, and we're taking it out on others on the road. So the how we teach is just as important as what we teach, I think.
There you have it. And also, I think he wanted the other person who cut him off in the road to somehow change.
Right.
But that's not the point, right? I mean,
well, part of it is the point. When we forgive, we're hoping the other will get it and accept our gift of being good to them and change, but they don't always. And so a big question is, how can we get their attention? And if we get their attention by shaking them up on the road, I would question whether that's the best way to go about
it. You're feeding it at that point.
You might be. See, the other might say, well, I don't deserve this, and they're seeing that they're now a victim on the road.
Looking back at the marriage, which is dysfunctional in my case, we would often just feed each other, and then it would escalate in terms of the tension or the argument, rather than defusing it,
right,
which may not have been possible, but I guess that's the goal, right?
The goal is, we have a number of goals when we forgive. One is to defuse the argument and come back together again in reconciliation and trust. But when that can't happen, then the goal is being healthy inside. Because when these kind of relationships that should be fair break down, we might be the victims of that, and we might have further victimization as we don't know how to get rid of the anger. There aren't that many ways to cure unhealthy anger. Forgiveness is one of them.
And sometimes it's amazing how much less tension and how much more forgiveness there was after we were in separate residences.
Right. No, right. Sure. Because the idea of forgiving, as you're seeing, really, Mitch, and reconciliation don't always fit hand in glove. And when that's the case, we've simply done the best we can. And as human beings, we can't always come together again. But we do have the possibility of cleansing that which is within us, so we can have healthier psychology, healthier relationships going forward, and healthier communities. If most of us spread our anger to others, we're going to end up with an angry community. And that is really when we're in trouble.
A lot of anger. Liberals don't forgive conservatives. Conservatives don't forgive liberals. Often in political discourse, one side wants the other side only forgives them once they've redeemed themselves in joining the first side. In other words, if you agree with me, or if you join me in my beliefs, I forgive you. Otherwise, I don't.
Right. And that's a really touchy question, whether forgiveness should enter into the political realm. I think if people are so offended by the other that it's getting to them, then I would say yes. Otherwise, a good political battle where there's, you know, debate and without the acrimony, and I'm not left emotionally cut and bleeding and lying in the gutter, doesn't require forgiveness.
Well, there are certain social issues that where mm-hmm. there are fundamental disagreements in terms of whether one sees it as an absolute
right.
truth or morality, where if the other person doesn't share that view, then I wonder if there just isn't forgiveness because they're rooted in the issue.
Well, I think there's still going to be a forgiveness possibility, but we can't let forgiveness stand or fall depending on whether we will get along, depending on whether we will come to a consensus. We can let others be who they are, as I hope they would let me be who I am, and then if they're offended, fine. But forgiveness doesn't always play into ideological differences.
Right. Well, there are various issues, obviously. They have nothing to do with that. But agree to disagree, because you can't. What are you going to do? Beat the person up or lock them up?
You
can choose not to talk to them, I suppose, but that's what happens all the time. Right?
Right. It does happen all the time. And so forgiveness entering in, I think, would be good so that we don't see the other as a monster, because the others aren't a monster. I'm sure there are some of your listeners who would disagree with that, but I would challenge that, because what you're really doing is talking to a human being who might have diametrically opposed views to you, but their views don't turn them monstrous. And that's the point and the challenge of forgiveness, to see views you might consider monstrous, but then pull back from the conclusion, which is incorrect, that the other is a monster for holding them.
You would say that maybe the person misguided in your mind.
Sure.
But that doesn't make them evil. Forgive them, for they know, I had to invoke the aforementioned Jesus, but forgive them, for they know not what they do. I mean, isn't that the goal?
Sure. I mean, it very well can be. And that would at least prevent an acceleration of acrimony, division, and what can turn, as we know, into violence.
Absolutely. That's what people have trouble with. People get upset and they turn red in the face when they talk about certain things. They can argue about who's a better band, the Beatles or the Stones.
Sure.
And you'll hit people red in the face because the other person doesn't agree.
Right. And again, I hope many people can see that it's just simply a heated argument. And maybe there isn't genuine offense requiring a genuine forgiveness response. But if people cross a line and there is this kind of lack of respect, then that's when forgiveness comes into play. When you think you've been treated with disrespect, where there's injustice, and then we can go forward if we choose to do so.
You just have gone to Israel, Greece, and Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland 30 years ago, or whenever the case, 40 years ago, you had all this murder and bombs, and it was a horrible thing. And now it's kind of quieted.
Right. I had mentioned George Mitchell earlier. Yeah. He forged what we now know as the Peace Accord in 1998. And things have quieted in the sense that the terrorist activities, they would call it paramilitary, they wouldn't call it terrorism,
right.
were like exploding buses on Great Victoria Street. That's not the case, but we still have segregated neighborhoods. We have people who are suspicious of one another, don't trust one another, and stereotype one another. Those require forgiving responses so we can come together as persons in community. Right now they have what they call a divided community.
Correct. And you deal with different religions as well, and we have a lot of animosity and angst and suspicion over that.
Indeed. Right. And see, forgiveness doesn't say come to a consensus on that. It says what is happening as a consequence of insistence or superiority, and what is happening within individual hearts, families, and communities, and what can we do regarding the effects of all of these standoffs and condemnations. We don't try to solve theological problems. We try to solve the effects of what people do when they disagree.
You've got it figured out. I mean, I assume that people could use you for 24/7 service.
Sure use forgiveness 24/7 for sure.
But on the personal level, and we have this horrible opioid crisis in the country, and certainly obesity. And I talked to one psychologist talking about the diet issue, which is often a problem. And he says, "Well, people eat the pain." I heard that for the first. I thought, "Whoa, you're upset. There's anxiety. There's tension, and of course, you just go and." Even subconsciously,
Are
eating chocolates or
cheeseburgers
or whatever the case might be.
We can wear the effects of injustice on our bodies, in our bodies, when it comes to, as you say, obesity or masking the pain through pills. There are many ways we can do that. And masking the pain is not the same as being cured of the pain. And that's where the beauty of forgiveness
is. The underlying message. We're somewhat short tethered because of changes in the schedule. But we'll do it again, I hope, Doctor. And you want to give the website of people?
It's internationalforgiveness.com, and we have a really good conference coming up, the Jerusalem Conference on Forgiveness in Jerusalem itself, July 12th and 13th, and that's on the website, internationalforgiveness.com.
International forgiveness, and really is an international question. Internationalforgiveness.com. Dr. Bob Enright, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mitch.
And I forgive you, and there's nothing I should forgive. You're just a nice guy.
Hey, thanks for forgiving me. I'm going to go in peace today.
Can you forgive me, by the way? I wish somebody would.
No need.
Oh, well, okay. Thank you so much. Libertarians nationally are here, and we'll be talking to you about that in a second on the Mitch Hanks Show at MadisonTalks.com.
When it comes to telephone on-hold advertising, some commonly asked questions are, why do we need an on-hold message? How do we write a script? How long should the message be? How does the message get played? How much does it cost? I'm Bob of Abella Creative Services, and a telephone on-hold message speaks directly to your target audience while they're on hold with your company. Continuously advertises only your business without the clutter of competitive ads and for just a fraction of conventional advertising costs. At Bob Abella Creative Services, we'll help you draft a well-written script, provide the appropriate announcer, music, or sound effects, and the studio time and expertise to put it all together. We'll also provide you with any special equipment you might need to play your on-hold message. Even though we probably have more experience than most other on-hold message companies, we'll cost you less. Let Bob Abella Creative Services stretch your advertising dollar with an on-hold message that provides your customers with real, actionable solutions to their problems. Bob Abella Creative Services gets results. Just send us an email at bacsgetsresults@gmail.com. That's bacsgetsresults@gmail.com.
The all-new Mitch Hanks Show would like to thank our sponsors. We're grateful for their support of the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary.
Two Bridges was one of the toughest neighborhoods in New York, especially in the Al Smith projects. It was a no man's land with no rules. On Christmas Eve 1951, Mac Pastamadeo vanished without a trace while walking home with his little boy Angelo. Now 13, Angelo's a gang member and the only witness to the brutal murder of an undercover cop who holds a clue to Mac's disappearance 6 years ago. Stalked by killers, Angelo becomes part of an unlikely alliance of a priest, a mob boss, and a police detective in order to uncover the truth behind the murder and Mac's disappearance. Weepers by Nick Chiarkis.
Mitch Hank for Atterbury Cameron Haig.
I'm proud to be sitting next to senior partner and a man who's been voted Wisconsin's super lawyer multiple times, Eric Haig. How often do you take a case all the way to a jury trial?
What we do that's different from some firms is, when necessary, we take the case to trial. It's the ability to do that and a track record of doing that that gives you the leverage to get a fair settlement for the vast majority of your clients. There are lawyers out there who actually will not take them to trial. And it doesn't take the insurance industry, of course, very long to figure that out. So their leverage is minimal when trying to negotiate a settlement on the case, whereas the lawyers at Atterbury, Cameron, Haig have all demonstrated an ability to take cases to trial. It's that track record that provides the leverage to get a fair settlement so that we don't have to take the cases to trial.
So when you need a lawyer, do what I did. Call Atterbury, Cameron, Haig and reach them at yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com. That's yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com.
Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
Nicholas Sarwark, who's the national chair of the National Libertarian Party, is on the phone. And hello, Nicholas.
Hello, Mitch. How are you?
Well, I'm good. I know you're proud of native son Phil Anderson, who ran for U.S. Senate in Wisconsin, Libertarian, and certainly had my vote. And I think got 4% statewide. Pretty good.
Yeah, he did great. It's always good to see quality candidates going forward to present that libertarian message of, you know, freedom to pursue happiness any way you choose, as long as you don't hurt other people and you don't take their stuff. We need more people presenting that message as an alternative to the old parties.
And let's go, and of course he calls himself, and I know there's a range of views, but he calls himself a pro-life libertarian because he gives civil rights to the unborn, which I know other libertarians would not do, but I don't know if you want to weigh in on that, but there's a wider tent than people would think.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing about that issue within the Libertarian Party is that there are good faith views both on the pro-choice and pro-life sides, but in the Libertarian Party you have an agreement that regardless of how you feel about that issue, we agree that government getting involved in it makes things worse. So we should neither have government, you know, funding abortions or getting involved in any way, that's a very complex and fraught issue that involves a lot of ethical and moral concerns, and that government really doesn't help.
Because even the official pro-life position is not to punish the woman who would have one. It's just there the government, in the minds of others, would punish the doctor, I guess, with fines of some sort. But when you say the government shouldn't be involved, the government is involved in enforcing laws.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's the thing about the libertarian platform generally, is where we look at things as we try to minimize the number of things that are criminal, where the government can use criminal penalties against somebody for violating a law, and we try and limit those to things that crimes that have victims. That's the reason that we support ending the war on drugs. We support ending any sort of law against adults doing things themselves in their own lives and making choices that maybe you or I wouldn't agree with. That's kind of the libertarian idea.
Right, but following up,
I don't know how to live my life. How do I know how to tell you how to live yours?
Point well taken, but following up on the previous point, the pro-life libertarian would say that the unborn child was harmed, so there was a victim. So if then what would the person say then in that philosophy toward government as a punisher?
The question point would be whether or not the enforcement mechanism has more benefit than cost. And that's probably a more complex political and policy debate than we can get into.
Right, right. Well, we can go to the things I promise I will, yes, not to get bogged down. Nicholas Sarwark, tell me about the conference coming up this weekend. You're going to be coming to Madison.
Yeah, so the Libertarian Party of Wisconsin is having their state convention this weekend, April 21st through the 23rd, at Treehaven up in Tomahawk. I'm flying in to speak on Saturday. They'll be electing officers and really doing the business of the party. We have active political parties in all 50 states, in addition to the National Libertarian Party. And that's where a lot of the rubber hits the road, where in these states where people are getting together to put up candidates who want to make their communities more free, who want to kind of remove those government barriers that are holding people back from, you know, building their businesses or raising their families or just finding whatever makes them happy. And I'm really excited at all of the great work that's being done in Wisconsin and all over the country. You know, coming out of our 2016 election, the amount of energy and enthusiasm and party growth is just phenomenal.
Well, it's amazing because a lot of people, including myself, weren't really attracted to any of the major candidates, I mean, in terms of the Democrat or Republican for president, found myself gravitating to Gary Johnson and William Weld, and I'm sure others did that too. What would you say now, looking back to the election, and who voted for Johnson Weld, who maybe previously wouldn't have, or how did that work?
So in 2016, we got lucky, and I'm the first one to admit that. The two old parties nominated the most unpopular people in American politics going back at least 100 years. And we nominated two experienced former two-term governors who had tons of experience and the qualifications to be president and vice president at a time when it seemed like the two old parties were losing their minds. So we got a lot of extra votes from people who may not have voted Libertarian in the past or may not have otherwise been inclined. And our challenge right now, going into the midterm elections in 2018, is to use that energy and momentum from those vote totals. We tripled our previous record on a national election. Use that energy to build up state parties, to recruit more candidates for the midterms, to increase membership and revenue, and really establish ourselves as the political alternative for people who are tired of the old parties fighting over which one of them gets to take your tax money and give it to their special interest cronies as political fans.
Couple of things. I would be attacked by Democrats when I said I was leaning Johnson Weld. They would say, well, they're against public education. And to that, you say what?
To that, I say we want our children to be educated as well as possible. And that's, I have three little children myself, 6, 5, and 2. And my children go to a public school here in Phoenix. And that's the right thing for them. So we generally want to have more options and more opportunity in education. My experience is that the government doesn't do a lot of stuff well, and so more options and more competition is usually a good thing. You know, parents tend to be more involved in their children's education when they have some kind of skin in the game, and communities tend to do better when there are those options in that competition. You know, the other thing is, I wouldn't really put public education or government schooling at the top of my list. I would start with things like the war on drugs and stopping our foreign interventions overseas where we send our kids to die in other countries' civil wars, and improving the free trade situation so that we can get back to an America that's prosperous rather than trying to build a wall against goods and services from overseas and stop that interaction between our country and other countries.
Well, on the question of the foreign wars, there are those who will argue that by being uninvolved and being isolationist, if you will, that you've had this massive migrant, this massive refugee problem as a result of no one really establishing security, and therefore that we're going to cause havoc in Western Europe and could potentially cause havoc here. So you have a cause and effect argument that if you, by doing nothing, you do a lot later.
Yeah, I probably won't. I wouldn't cop to isolationists. Libertarians are actually supportive of interaction between people, between companies, between individuals and organizations across borders. We applauded the bringing down or the relaxation of the barriers against people going to Cuba, where one of the best things that you can do to try and change another country, especially one that has an authoritarian regime, is to have people go talk to the people there. That's what brings down these oppressive regimes. That's what brought down the Soviet Union, was, you know, reruns of Dallas and educational tours going over for free exchange of ideas. It really is the sort of thing that can help build those bridges. So libertarians would support a lot more trade, a lot more interaction between people, where people realize that everyone around the world pretty much wants the same thing. They want a better life for their family. They want prosperity. They want the ability to do what they think will bring them happiness.
But
and I don't think that Western Europe is a good example at all. They have a much different cultural and social structure. They have a different system of citizenship. They have a different view of religion. Most European countries have an official state-sponsored religion, which is something that we don't have in the United States. So I think, you know, it's kind of apples and oranges to say, well, what happened in Western Europe is something that would happen here, because the environment's completely different.
Nicholas Sarwark of the National Libertarian Party is going to be coming in to this weekend to speak at a conference in Tomahawk. Back with more in a moment on the Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com.
If you're a B2B business owner or manager who also sells, have you ever said, I wish I could be in more than one place at the same time? I need more me. As the owner, you're great at sales because nobody knows your product like you do. But administrative and operations work take too much of your time and take you away from bringing in more business. Now there is a revolutionary new solution. Discover it in a 3-minute video at needmoreme.com. Now you can be in more than one place at a time. Learn how at needmoreme.com. That's needmoreme.com.
This is the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
Joe here from Comedy on State. Looking for something to do? Maybe you got a birthday coming up. You want to get the family together? Come to Comedy on State. It's so easy. You can go to madisoncomedy.com. You can purchase your tickets right from the website. We book the best comics from Late Night, from Conan O'Brien, from Comedy Central.
For a list of upcoming Comedy Club performers or to purchase tickets, go to madisoncomedyclub.com and click shows. Performer bios are available by clicking on their pictures.
That's Comedy on State. madisoncomedy.com or 256-0099.
In real estate, you want to work with Tim Braille.
Tim had a plan whether we should look at a new house, an older style house, and right away he knew what we were looking for and what would be in our best interest.
Let's get ink on paper today with Realtor Tim Braille of Coldwell Banker Success, 698-7653.
He was jolly, good-natured, and so thoughtful, and he's charismatic as well.
Tim Rail, 698-7653.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
We're talking to the national chair of the National Libertarian Party, Nicholas Sarwark, who's going to be in Tomahawk this weekend at the Tree Haven for speeches 21st through the 23rd. Getting back to the whole question of not isolationism in terms of trade or cultural exchanges or commerce, but if you look back, certainly everybody wants to point to the 30s and Neville Chamberlain. I mean, Neville Chamberlain could have been a libertarian. I don't know if he was or not in the day, but certainly didn't see Hitler coming. Other people saw Hitler coming, like Churchill. But they used to mock Churchill in the 30s as being a warmonger and a lunatic. And then they hired him when they were under siege. So at what point does one risk giving somebody too much room or too much rope if you're not engaged in some sort of military muscular fashion?
I think, you know, my foreign policy is informed personally by what Teddy Roosevelt said, that we should speak softly and carry a big stick. So I believe in having a strong military. I have family members who serve in the military right now that is strong enough to prevent any sort of attack, is strong enough to respond decisively against any sort of attack as a deterrent force. Libertarians are definitely in favor of national defense, but I mean, if you want to look at Chamberlain and his miscalculation about Germany in the late 30s, you also have to look at the forced settlement of World War I that created an environment in which somebody like Hitler was able to rise to power in Germany. You know, the problem with military interventionism, the problem with going and trying to spread diplomacy with bombs and guns, is that it very seldom works. You know, in addition to being immoral, which is also bad, it doesn't work very well. If you go back and look at American interventionism over the last 100 years, the only successful one, and I'm being charitable with it, is World War II and the Marshall Plan. That's the one time when, hey, we went, we used guns and bombs, and something good happened. Korea left the peninsula divided. Vietnam, we were defeated after getting involved in a war we shouldn't have in the first place. The South American interventions were pretty terrible. Iraq, I mean, we can see how that went. Afghanistan is pretty bad. World War One really, you know, led to World War II. We struggle to find a time when we don't have more bad collateral consequences, in addition to the loss of blood and treasure from these foreign interventions, then we have positive results.
And we did intervene in Iran in 53 by putting the Shah in. I mean, Guatemala in 54. We have a history. Certainly Allende in Chile, right, the whole, in 73. I mean, so I take your point.
And we always think that it's a good idea because there are smart people who work for the CIA, who work for the Department of Defense, that believe that with enough intelligence and foreign policy chops and enough bombs or guns, that they can reshape the world in a way that they want it to be shaped. And the problem is that human beings are complex, that societies are complex. And nobody, no matter how smart they are, no matter how much of an expert, knows more than a market, knows more than all of the people in society kind of coming to wisdom through mutual trade and interaction and voluntary discourse. And that's the big conceit of big government, is that if we just get smart enough people, they can just run this thing. I don't think it works that way, you know, and I'm the first to admit there's a lot of stuff I don't know. And that humility in politics is something that I think the libertarians bring to the table, where we say, look, you know, we may not have all the answers. The libertarian policy may not be the right policy on everything, but a policy where you allow people to voluntarily come to good solutions without trying to control them is overall going to have better effects than one that depends on finding the right people and putting the right people in place. Because if you give power to the position, sometimes somebody who shouldn't have it gets power. I think we can see that in the presidency, depending on your listeners' views. I'm not sure if it's this president or the previous one, but there's plenty of presidents where you look at it and go, man, that guy shouldn't have that power. The deeper truth is that nobody should have that level of power. It's not good to imbue that in any one person.
So should we have a constitutional convention and rewrite Article 2?
You know, we could just get back to the enumerated powers in Article 1, Section 8. I don't think we need a convention. I think we just need to apply the document we've got.
An executive running amok. Well, final thoughts with Nicholas Sarwark in a moment on the Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary.
Talk radio will never be the same. The uncommon sense of Mitch Hank has been unleashed worldwide. This is the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
When it comes to telephone on-hold advertising, some commonly asked questions are, why do we need an on-hold message? How do we write a script? How long should the message be? How does the message get played? How much does it cost? I'm Bob of Abella Creative Services, and a telephone on-hold message speaks directly to your target audience while they're on hold with your company. Continuously advertises only your business without the clutter of competitive ads and for just a fraction of conventional advertising costs. At Bob Abella Creative Services, we'll help you draft a well-written script, provide the appropriate announcer, music, or sound effects, and the studio time and expertise to put it all together. We'll also provide you with any special equipment you might need to play your on-hold message. Even though we probably have more experience than most other on-hold message companies, we'll cost you less. Let Bob Abella Creative Services stretch your advertising dollar with an on-hold message that provides your customers with real, actionable solutions to their problems. Bob Abella Creative Services gets results. Just send us an email at bacsgetsresults@gmail.com. That's bacsgetsresults@gmail.com.
6AM Marketing is a Wisconsin-based ad agency that doesn't look or act like other ad agencies. They don't follow conventional thinking and constantly push themselves and their clients to test the bounds of how far they can go. The result is relationships that have lasted more than 10 years. Clients refer to 6AM and their work as fresh, insightful, strategic, edgy, and creative. 6AM shows customers why your products and services are better than the competition. 6AM's brand smart process helps you establish your brand in the market for years to come. With a client's marketing team by its side, 6AM digs for the business problem the client is trying to solve and the business goals and objectives they hope to achieve, examining the market, competitors, the brand's consumers, and messaging to define a brand proposition that is both compelling and unique to the market. 6AM Marketing. They do it differently, and they do it well. Go to 6ammarketing.com. That's www.6ammarketing.com.
You're listening to The Mitch Hanks Show. Once again, here's the voice of uncommon sense, Mitch Hanks.
Nicholas Sarwark, National Chair of the Libertarian Party nationwide, going to be in Wisconsin this weekend at Tomahawk for a conference. And give me a website there, Nicholas, so people can get involved and find out more.
Absolutely. It's lpwi.org. Is the Libertarian Party of Wisconsin's website, and they can get involved, find details on the convention if they're able to make it up to Tomahawk this weekend, and find out more about a real political alternative for the state of Wisconsin.
LTWI.org. Hey, well, thank you, and continue good luck, and we hope Phil Anderson runs again. I mean, what the heck? 4% is a good place to start, better than a lot of people have done.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you, Nicholas. Appreciate that. We thank you for listening. And we will remind you that we're going to go to 2 hours on Monday, 8 to 10, for live portion of our broadcast. It will, of course, be recorded and posted as a podcast all day long and 24/7, along with other things that are on our page, other podcasts on our page, including Dev Shot on parenting and Clean Care on perspectives. Nick Chiarkis, former New York cop on the beat and author of a murder mystery about New York crime in the 50s. All kinds of really cool stuff. Tommy Thompson, former governor. All podcasts on our page, MadisonTalks.com. We want to thank Brian for engineering, Brian Messmer, Bob Keller, the space on West Wash. Check out his properties. Go to KellerApartments.com. That's KellerApartments.com. The Wide World of Radio is next with Bob Abella. Talk to you tomorrow.